Turn, if you would, to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. And we'll begin reading in just a moment at verse number 15. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15. But before we do that, have you heard about it? You've heard it announced. You've read about it. You've talked about it. You've thought about it. You may be tired of hearing about it, and you won't be hearing about it much longer, because this Friday night is our summer singing. I say that not to remind you, because you know that, and not to encourage you, because I'm sure you'll be here. But look around you and you see some empty pews. Wouldn't it be nice if all of those were filled with those like us that enjoy good gospel singing? We've put it out there in a letter and email and Facebook and various ways trying to get the message out. We've talked personally, but let's continue to do that. If you know others that you know would like to be here, they still don't know about it, encourage them to come and be with us, maybe even drop by and pick them up. And we have a good time of singing. How long it'll last, we're not exactly sure, but about an hour or so. We'll have singers from other congregations as well as those from here. And when it's all said and done, we'll move over and have a few cookies and reflect upon the events of the evening. And so remember that next Friday evening, the 15th of August, 7 o'clock in the evening. Now, if it comes and goes and you said, I don't remember hearing anything about that, I would encourage you to visit the doctor. 1 John chapter 2, beginning at verse 15. John writes, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever." It's interesting how quickly we enter this life, and how quickly after that we become so attached to, we might even say tethered to, the world around us. First thing we do is take a breath. And with that first breath of life, we attach ourselves to this earth. And God intended for that to be. I'm not suggesting we stop breathing. I'm just saying that's when we first attach ourselves to this world independent of our mothers. Not long after that, that we have our first nourishment. We continue breathing and we continue eating. And as we get a little older, we discover that we have bodies. And little babies, they notice their fingers and they notice and pull on their toes. They might tug on an ear. They realize they have a body. Over time, they come to believe, we may still falsely believe, that we are that body. And then time goes forward from there, and this little baby begins to have a possessive streak. If you've noticed, you try to take away a child's favorite blanket or take away a baby's pacifier or bottle, and there is a price to be paid for that. And as the baby grows into toddlerhood, it has a group of things that are belonging to the baby. One of the favorite words of that age is the word mine. You have a toy that you want to see and touch. No, that's mine. You have something that the child believes is theirs, and you encroach upon the space even of it. No, it's mine. And as that child grows and advances in a number of years, starts to add to his collection of stuff. And what I'm trying to say is, from the very first all the way through so much of life, We're so attached to this world, to the things of this world, and much of it naturally so, that we lose sight of what matters and what doesn't matter over time if we're not careful. You reach young adulthood where you can start buying things on your own and having things that belong just to you. If you're not careful, you tend to think that life's all about how much of stuff you have, how new of stuff you have, how different stuff you have. It reminds me of what Jesus said in Luke 12 when a man comes to him in the middle of his lesson and interrupts him. Christ, if you look at the text of Luke 12, is talking about something a lot more important than this man's problem, but he had to interrupt. Lord, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And Christ, after shrugging it off by saying, it's not my business to get in your affairs, and I'm paraphrasing there, he then says this, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. That's something that we sometimes never learn at all, and sometimes we learn but learn too late, that life's not just about the stuff you have. But so much of the middle part of life is an accumulation of grabbing and holding on to things of this life. You get just a little older and you're thinking about the end of life and you're holding on to what little you have left. And so you exercise yourself, and exercising yourself to feel younger and look younger, you invest your money in creams and oils and various things to make it look as if what is happening is not happening. And by the way, I'm not against those things. I'm just telling you, you can't turn back the hands of time no matter how hard you try to do it. Sometimes even a surgeon is involved. Until finally you reach the end of life, and usually by then, because of just the events as they transpire, you find yourself, even against your better desires and interests, letting go. Letting go of all these things you thought were so important. Letting go. Well, that's exactly what John is talking about here. It's one thing to learn this on our deathbed, but it's much better for us and all involved to learn it earlier. And the earlier we learn it, the better. This world is not our home. We're just passing through. You might remember the words of Psalm 90, where after describing God's everlasting existence, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God, the psalmist said, in the second verse there. He goes on to say, our years are 70, 80. And then after giving that, he says this, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. And he's prefaced that by saying, we're soon cut off and we fly away. And no, we're not going to sing I'll Fly Away. That'd be a good song for right now, but only have so much time for so many songs. But the fact is, we realize that at some point, the sooner we realize that and live as if we have acknowledged that truth, the more serene and secure and peaceful, the more at peace we'll be in our own lives. There is nothing more frustrating than trying to make something tangible, something that is a matter of flesh, making that something eternal, which is impossible. You can't turn that which is temporal into something eternal. You can't take your stuff and take it with you. You can't take your treasures on earth and act as if they're treasures of heaven and have them act accordingly. Instead, we have to, as John says here, break loose of this love that we have with the world. Turn in your songbooks, if you would, to number 884. 884. the words beginning this wonderful song. One of the wonderful songwriters for the church in this past century, the 20th, was Brother Tillett S. Tetley. So many songs came from his mind, came from his pen. And nothing against the new songs these days, except to say that there is a depth to some of these old songs that is just missing in many of the newer ones. So much depth of meaning. And as you'll read with me, you'll see what I'm talking about. He says, "Earth holds no treasures, but perish with using, however precious they be. Yet there's a country to which I am going. Heaven holds all to me." Well, that's what we've been talking about. From this journey from birth to death, the journey we have in this body, in this life. These treasures of life, the stuff of living. We realize at some point, and if we don't in this life, we will when we leave it, that these treasures, they perish with the using. These treasures on earth, they have moth and rust that corrupt them. They have thieves that break through and steal them, as Jesus will talk about in Matthew chapter 6. And perhaps the best thing we can ever do is, before we fly away, let go of the stuff, the concerns, the matters of this life. To let go of those things that never were real in the first place. Because though our bodies have an expiration date and are just here for a while, the soul of man lives on. Our existence goes past the grave. And it's heaven that should hold all to us. Long before we're there, it should hold all to us right now. Let's sing together. You might turn to the book of Philippians now, because what I've been encouraging that all of us do, it seems that Paul has discovered the secret of doing it. And that is letting go of the stuff of now, letting loose of the love we might have for the world, and looking above instead. In Philippians chapter 4, I'd like to read with you, beginning at verse number 10. something that Paul has learned, which all of us would do well to learn along with him. Philippians 4, beginning at verse number 10. He says, "But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now, at last, your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am in, therewith to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Now, from a purely materialistic viewpoint, Paul's language here is nonsensical at best, absurd at worst. He is saying, I don't care if I have a lot or nothing. I can have fullness, full satiety of food that I'm eating, or I can have nothing at all, and I'm just as happy either way. I am content in either condition. He doesn't say I've always been this way. He didn't say I was born with this mindset. In fact, as we've just mentioned, very early on we learn what's ours, and we use the word mine. That's just a part of growing up. And over time we learn the beauty, the wonders, the privilege of having more stuff, and having newer stuff, and having a lot of stuff. But Paul has learned something over time. He's learned that none of that stuff matters. He's learned that he can be the person he needs to be in complete peace and contentment, regardless of how much stuff he has, or whether he has any stuff at all, or whether he's in a place of pain and peril or a place of paradise and prestige, it doesn't matter. Paul is going to be content. He's had to learn that. But he's had some help along the way. He says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." It's the example of Christ, the help of Christ, the providence of Christ, the patience of Christ that helps him help us as well. To let go of this stuff that doesn't matter. To stop acting like it does. And start centering our minds, our thoughts, our hopes, our affections, our very lives on things above. Things that really do matter. I suppose if you want to know what makes a life successful, and of course there's a lot of answers to that question. Don't you hate a teacher that asks you an open question that only he has the one answer to in his own mind? If I were to ask you what makes a successful life, you might say, well, it's serving the Lord, it's following God, it's doing things His way, it's all of which is correct. But there's a sense in which, in terms of our own peace of mind, our own personal contentment, that true maturity comes when we finally, if ever, come to grips with this fact of letting go with the stuff that doesn't matter. Letting go of the anxiety, the worries of having stuff or having enough. Letting go and releasing the anxiety of worry and concern about the things of this life, which are going to take their course with us or without us. This life, which is only a short blip in our existence. Because I'll quote Zig Ziglar again. He's not in the Bible, but in this, he speaks the truth. When he said we're going to be dead a lot longer than we're alive. And you put that in the Bible context, we'll have our existence long past this life, more so than the short time we have within it. I turn to 957, because that's exactly what the songwriter here is speaking of. And I'll remind you one more time why we're doing this as we are on Sunday evenings. It's not just because I enjoy good singing, and I do. But it's a purpose behind all of this that I think I've told you before, but I, as we go along, feel stronger and stronger about. It's so easy to sing songs, especially songs we've known forever, almost by rote, by mechanical tradition, not even thinking about the actual words we're singing. And we've all been there. We've come to services and our minds are somewhere else. No, they shouldn't be, but they are. And we get distracted by something going on during the service. We shouldn't be, but we are. And we find ourselves halfway through a worship service realizing we never showed up to begin with. As old A.C. Williams said, we've attended the service, but we've missed the worship. Well, that can happen easily with our songs because we can sing a melody we like without even thinking about the words that we're singing. And if we do nothing else in these Sunday evening lessons than this, it's enough from my mind to make these Sunday evenings successful. And that is reminding us of what the words mean and helping us to realize that as we sing, we're not just singing a nice tune. We are singing, hopefully, a wonderfully Bible-based message of encouragement to us and edification to others and, of course, glory to God. And in this case, the song we're about to sing reminds us that we're not home yet. What we have here, as wonderful as it might be, is not all we'll ever have. If we're in Christ, we'll have so much more past this life than we can ever accumulate or have in this life. In truth, this world is not my home. This world is not my home. I'm
just a passing through. My treasures are there up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels that I can be are on the heaven or the north, and I can't get home in this world anymore. Oh Lord, you know I have no friend like you. Heaven is not my home, Lord, what will I do?
I hope that's your thought. Hope those are your sentiments as well. Is heaven your home one day? As has been said by others before me, heaven is a prepared place for a prepared people. And so I ask you this evening, are you prepared? Have you obeyed the gospel as the Bible teaches? Have you been baptized to have sins washed away by Christ's blood? If not, that needs to happen for you. Or perhaps as a child of God, you've strayed and need to come back. He's always willing, longing to hold those who come back to Him in repentance and take them back as the prodigal's father did the prodigal. If you need to come this evening, come now as together we stand and sing.